യോഗസൂത്ര പരിചയ വർഗസംഖ്യ ഏകത്രിംശത്. സർവേഷാം നമസ്കാര. പ്രാർത്ഥനാ ശ്ലോകേന ആരംഭ. യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി. So we are in the third unit of the fourth pada, where the nature of the mind, the nature of objects outside, and the nature of the soul, purusha, are logically discussed. And mostly the views of the Bauddhas are countered, and the view of the Sankhyas and the Yogins are established on the nature of the mind, the nature of the soul, and also the nature of the objects of the world outside. In the previous class, we have already seen Sutras 12 and 13. In the Sutra 13, it was mentioned that everything is made up of the three gunas. Gunatmanaha. In the realm of matter, everything is made up of the gunas. Now we move on to the 14th sutra. Parinamaikatvat vastu tattvam. Now a question may arise that there are three gunas. It is these three gunas which cause, or the entire universe is made up of these three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. Now these three are three entities, sattva, rajas and tamas. Now how can three entities join and create one effect? For example, a table, a chair and a book, when they three join together, do they produce anything? Nothing. So sattva, rajas and tamas, do they produce one single effect? How is it possible? Then it is said, parinamaikatvat. Now, they do produce single effect. Parinama ekatva. Their modification is in line with producing one outcome. Ekatva. So, how do they combine? How is their parinama? Their parinama is in the form of angangi bhava. When one guna becomes dominant, the other two become subservient. When sattva becomes dominant, the other two become subservient. Depending upon the nature of the object to be created, the dominance of the gunas are determined and the others follow suit. So parinama ekatvat. So as their parinama, as their modification, as they combine together, as they modify together as a single entity, though they are three gunas, in the process of modification they adjust and adopt themselves in the order of anga angi, and hence vastu tattvam, the outcome, the object, is also tattvam, ekatvam. So the outcome is also singular. So that is why, though there are three gunas, still we say one object, one table, one chair, or one sense organ, one sound, all these, the oneness is possible because of the parinama ekatva, because of modification as a single file in the form of anga and angi. Anga is limbs and angi is the whole. So according to the dominant guna, the other two gunas adjust themselves. So as the wick, oil and fire combine together to form a lamp. Similarly, these three gunas combine together to bring out vastu tattvam, that is a singularity of the objects. So that is Sutra 14. Now, the 15th Sutra, it is in the form of answer to the Bauddhas, where the Bauddhas hold the view that no objects are real, objects are mere projections of the mind. But this sutra says, Vibhakta Panthaha. So objects are nothing but the projections of the mind, which means the mind and the objects are one and the same. That is the view of the Bauddhas. Whereas this sutra says, Tayoho Vibhakta Panthaha. The path of the realm of the objects and the realm of the mind is two different things. Their path veer off from each other. Tayoho, of the two, of the objects and also the mind, their paths are different. So how do we say this? It is a common experience that on a single object, say a chocolate, different minds have different views. Each of them on seeing a chocolate have different views. How can this commonness of object and differences in the feelings associated with that object that arises in various minds be explained if the objects are called as mere projections of the mind? On seeing a chocolate, a child gets excited. On seeing a chocolate, a diabetic feels, oh, this is harmful to me. On seeing a chocolate, a mother of a child thinks, oh, let my child not see this, or else he will start crying and start demanding this. On seeing a chocolate, a shopkeeper may say, oh, this chocolate is lying here, being unsold for many days. When will it be sold? So, vastu samyepi, though the object is same, chitta bhedaha, each and every mind perceives it differently. So if the object is not grounded and real in its existence, if the object is a mere projection of various minds, then how can the same object be perceived by different minds? First, the similarity of the object in different minds, and the differences, chitta bheda, the differences in emotions that are attached with the same object. How can it be accounted for if the object is a mere projection of the mind, if it is a mere projection of one mind or many minds? So, and hence the yogins hold the view that the objects are real outside and they are perceived by different minds, and the objects are not mere projections of the mind. So we move on to the next sutra. Nacha ekachitta tantram vastu tad apramanakam tada kim syat. Now another view regarding the reality of the objects outside. If the object, the argument by the argument placed before in the previous sutra, a small amendment is made by a person who argues that the objects are mere appearances or projections of the mind. He says that, okay, let the object not be eternally present. When the mind perceives it, then let it come to existence. And then when it is not perceived, let it go into oblivion. So a limited reality of the object outside, if it is presented, why can this not be taken? When perceived, or whereas the yogins and the sankhyas hold the view that
the objects outside are clearly separate and they have their own existence as separate from the mind. Initially, in the previous sutra, the view presented of the Bauddhas was that there is no object outside. The refutation was presented there, and now if there is an amendment here that, okay, let the object outside be present, real. But the object is really present outside only when it is perceived by the mind. To this view, then what happens is, what happens if an object is not perceived? If a mind is perceiving a part, through the senses, when the mind is not perceiving the part, then what happens to the part? When one mind is not perceiving, okay, then another mind perceives the part. If no mind at all perceives a given part, then what happens to that part? Does it disappear? So, tada kim syat? This is a question. Should we say that it simply vanishes? And again, when one wants to perceive it, where does it all of a sudden come from? So, it cannot be held that the mind, when it perceives the object exists, and when the mind perceives the object exists. When the mind does not perceive, the object does not exist. So, this view is untenable, because if it is not perceived, then what happens to that object needs to be explained. If it is not explained, then this view cannot be accepted. As there is no answer to this, it is clear that the object outside is real, independent of the mind. Now, again, another question may arise, may be placed by the Bauddhas, on the nature of the mind, as propounded by the yogins. That is, okay, the mind is independent and the objects are independent. They have their own existence. So, when will they connect? How is knowledge attained? Is it all arbitrary? How does knowledge happen? Or, the view leading to this sutra may be explained in another way also, as put by another commentator. The mind, according to the yoga philosophy, is all pervasive. So, as the mind is all pervasive, and the objects, they are present everywhere, so the mind is always in contact with objects outside, then knowledge should always be there of all objects at all times. If this is the flaw pointed out by the Bauddhas to both the views, the answer is that there is a process of knowledge, there is a process by which the mind attains knowledge. Though it is all pervasive, the mind requires the body and the senses. The vritti or the function of the mind happens through the mind. Mind's connection with the object happens through the body and the senses lodged in the body. And when they get into contact with the objects, then vastu jnatam, the object becomes known. When they do not get connected, when the senses do not get connected with the object, the mind does not know. So hence, there is a method by which the mind gets to know things. There is a process which explains how mind attains knowledge and when the mind does not attain knowledge. And though the mind is all pervasive, when the mind operates through the senses, objects are known. When the mind does not connect with the senses, objects are not known. Taduparagapekshitvat, as there is the dependence of the mind on the connection with tat, the body and the senses, or as the mind depends upon the connection with the objects through the body and the senses, chittasya vastu jnata jnatam, the objects are sometimes known or sometimes not known for the chitta. That is Sutra 17. Now, so far, the nature of the mind and the nature of the object outside was discussed. Now, slowly, the nature of self, regarding this, a few questions are raised and answers are given. Logical discussion, logical viewpoint of the Sankhyas are given here. Now, the mind attaining knowledge was mentioned. The mind itself is known. Chitta vrittayaha, it should be chitta vrittayaha, chitta vrittayaha, there is a spelling mistake here, typographical error. Chitta vrittayaha, sada jnataha chitta vrittayaha. The mind which sometimes knows and sometimes does not know is always known by the Purusha, who is the Prabhu, who is the Lord. He is the Lord to whom the Chitta is a servant. Such activities of the Chitta, all activities of the Chitta is always known by the Purusha. That is his nature. And how does he always know the activities of the Chitta? Because the Purusha is Aparinami. He does not change. That is, his knowership does not undergo any change. The knowership of the Chitta depends upon the Uparaga. It operates through the connection of the mind and of the senses. Whereas Purusha's connection with the Chitta is always there, and the Purusha does not undergo any change, and hence the knowership of the for example the knowership of the Chitta depends upon the senses, whereas the knowership of the Purusha of the Chitta does not depend upon anything else. And further, Purusha does not also change. As he is beyond the realm of the three gunas, he does not change, and hence his nature of being the knower of the Chitta Vrittis always remains, and such is the nature of the Purusha. So these are the aspects on the Purusha which is placed here. Based on this sutra, various questions are raised in the upcoming sutras and explained. Now, in the previous sutra, it was mentioned that the Purusha knows the Chitta Vrittis. Why should a Purusha be accepted to know the Chitta Vrittis? Why not the Chitta know its own self? Why the Chitta not be Swabhasam? Why the Chitta does not know itself? Because Chitta itself is an object of knowledge. It itself is known. As Chitta itself is known, there is a knower of Chitta. And hence, Drishyatva, the Chitta itself is known. And hence, it itself is not self-luminous or self-knower. How do we know this? Aham kruddhaha, aham shantaha. So I am angry. I have a peaceful mind. So all these statements establish the fact that the mind is there, and the sensations or the changes of the mind or the feelings of the mind is perceived, and that perceiver is Purusha. And so the mind itself as its own activities are perceived by something, some other entity, hence it is not self-luminous. Now, another argument, another aspect on why the mind cannot be perceiving itself and perceiving the object outside at the same time. The Bauddhas, they hold this view that let's end with the mind. Why to go till Purusha? The mind knows itself and also the objects outside. To this, it is said, going by the Bauddha view itself, Eka Samaye, simultaneously, Ubhaya Anavadharanam, the knowledge of both, that is the subject and the object, is impossible. The knowledge of its own self, the chitta, cannot know itself and also the object outside at the same time. Going by the Bauddha view itself, the Bauddhas, they say that the mind is kshanika and it is the mind that creates the object outside. So there is a cause and effect connection between the mind and the object outside. So whichever is a cause should pre-exist its effect. So the mind is the cause and the object that is projected from the mind is its effect. So wherever there is a cause and effect connection, karya niyata purva vritti karanam, so the cause should pre-exist the cause should pre-exist the effect and the effect follows the existence of the cause. So when a pot is to be made, the mud has to pre-exist. The mud and the pot cannot simultaneously come into existence at any given point. Thus, we can see that both the mind and also the effect of the mind, the object, cannot coexist. As there is a cause and effect connection between the mind and the object, they cannot coexist at the same time in the mind. So, Eka Samaye Ubhaya Anavadharanam, that flaw is also brought out by which the mind knowing itself and knowing the object outside is impossible. When they cannot coexist together, then how can the knowing them comes? So knowing them comes later. Let them first coexist together. So that is presented in Sutra 20. Now another view is, again the Bauddha's viewpoint is presented and refuted. Why to go for a Purusha? Let one mind perceive the object outside and let another mind perceive this object which has the perception of the outside object. Chittantaram. So one part of the mind let it perceive outside and another let it perceive this mind. Then what happens is, if a second mind is accepted, buddhi buddhe he. So if one mind is postulated, if the existence of one mind is postulated to know, if one mind is deputed to know another mind which knows the object outside, then to know that mind, that is which is currently perceiving this mind, another mind is required. So a series of minds till infinity, an infinite regress will happen, so that so one mind knows the objects outside, another mind knows this mind, and there should be, as it is a mind, it has to be known. So another mind is postulated and another mind is postulated. In this way, it will lead to infinite regress. Further, we also know that if with regard to the memory of one mind itself, there is a lot of confusion. If we take only one mind, we get confused with identity of various persons while recollecting our memory in the process of remembering. So what happens when there is a series of minds which goes till the infinity? When we say another mind knows this mind, so in this manner, so the knower cannot be another mind. The knower should be a Purusha who himself is not perceived but is a constant unchanging perceiver. So this is the essence of 21. And then 22. Chitehe apratisankramayaha tadakara pattau swabuddhi samvedanam. So in Sutra 18 it was stated that Purusha knows the mind. Purusha is the knower of the mind. There is a clarification which is made that though Purusha it has already been made, but it is very clearly established here. Though the Purusha knows, is stated to know the mind, what is the nature of the knowership of the Purusha? How does he know the mind? It is not similar to the mind knowing the objects. The mind connects with the senses through and then those senses get connected with the object and they give the feedback to the mind. So that is how mind gets knowledge. Whereas the chiti or the Purusha is apratisankrama, does not undergo any change, does not connect with anything, does not get modified, but tad akara patti, it simply is reflected on the mind, on the form of the mind, and this is called as swabuddhi samvedanam. This is called as when the mind is getting the reflection of the Purusha, this presence of reflection of Purusha on the mind is swabuddhi samvedanam, is stated as Purusha getting the knowledge of the activities of the mind. So there is a clear difference between the knowership of the Purusha and the knowership of the Chitta. In the knowership of the Chitta, Chitta does actions, gets connected with senses and other supporting elements, whereas Purusha, being unchanged without indulging in any activity, by his mere reflection on the Chitta, he is said to know the Chitta. So this reflection based knowership, which ensures that the Purusha is not undergoing any change, so such is the knowership of the Purusha, which does not require any modification on the nature of the Purusha, any activity or modification on the nature of the Purusha. So that is clarified in Sutra 22. So though this is the fact, why is there a connection? Why is there a confusion? Brahma Bijam. Why do people mistake, or why is there at all various arguments placed by the Bauddhas on making the Chitta itself the final entity, the self? Because there is a cause. Chittam has the reflection of the Drashta, the seer. Chittam also has the knowledge of the outer world. So Drashtra Drishyo Paraktam. Chitta is the one which is connected to both the Drashta and also the Drishyam outside. And so Sarvartham, on normal perception, one feels that Chittam is the conscious entity which knows. So knowership is with the chitta. Such a sense comes because there is the reflection of the subject and also the object, and hence this is the bijam or the source of Brahma, the confusion of mistaking the chitta as the self. And the same point is further elaborated. Though the chitta seems to be the knower, an independent entity, Purusha, the knower, exists. That is also presented in the 24th sutra. The same idea is presented here. Though the mind, tad asankheya vasana bihi chitram api, tad the mind asankheya vasana bihi, with innumerable vasanas and latent impressions, chitram api, it exhibits various experiences, happiness, sorrow, anger, peace, chitram api, all that is there in the mind, all that is experienced in at the level of the mind, all this again point to the or lead to a confusion that, oh, it is the mind which is experiencing, and hence so mind is the final entity. Such a confusion may occur. Chitram api, though it is of variegated experiences, it seems to be the substratum, it is the substratum of variegated experiences, but still it is parartham, it exists for a Purusha. How? Samhatya karitvat, because it works in tandem, it combines with the objects, it combines with the senses. Samhatya means working together with other entities. So when a few things join together and work, they work for someone else. For example, the hand, the mouth, and all the senses, they work to get the food into the abdomen. Similarly, the brick, cement, water, all these combine together to create another another purpose, that is of building a house. So various employees, they work, their work, their combination is for achieving the ends of the employer. So wherever there is samhanana, coming together of individuals, parartha is there. So serving the purpose of another is there. So the mind combines its work along with the senses and the objects, and hence it works for some other entity. That some other entity is none other than the Purusha, which has been mentioned earlier as the Jnata, Sada Jnataha. So he is always the one who knows the activities of the mind. So thus we see that the nature of Purusha, his relationship with the mind, the nature of the objects outside are all presented in this third unit of the Kaivalya Pada. So we end this session here, and we'll continue in the next session.